evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 10, 2019. Residents wonder what is happening as soldiers and tanks are deployed around Juba.
Yesterday was a little bit confused, but people was having scares a little bit, but the situation was at late time, people was not confirmed what's happening, so people was messed up, but yesterday was a little bit, lot of movement of troops.
And the body monitoring ceasefire in South Sudan is warning the warring parties to implement the peace deal.
Our expectations are that the parties will fully comply with the permanent ceasefire in all those activities.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Juba Town say this week's deployment of armed military and national security service personnel in tanks at strategic locations like the John Garang Mausoleum around the capital is causing panic. Information Minister Michael Makui says the presence of the soldiers and the tanks around Juba is normal. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Juba resident Henry Kamis says seeing security forces stationed around several locations in Juba leaves him with an uneasy feeling.
Yesterday I was very worried, but I don't know what's going on in the city of Juba. But I don't know actually what's the government planning or what's the rest of the people planning. Because we as a citizen, we don't concern about those issues. We just need security, we need good health, we need peace. Like they say, peace has come, but actually the situations of yesterday will not show that really there is a peace.
Juba resident Remy Ronyo says he was terrified at the sight of military tanks and armored vehicles patrolling the streets while walking to work yesterday.
I was so surprised. I don't know what is exactly happening. I also don't know, maybe we're still going back to what happened previously. So I felt unstable.
Juba resident Michael Raphael says no one seems to know what is going on.
Yesterday was a little bit confused, but people was having scares a little bit, but the situation was at late time, people was not confirmed what's happening, so people was messed up, but yesterday was a little bit lot of movement of troops.
The government's decision to deploy security forces in Juba comes just days after unidentified people posted messages on social media calling for mass protests on May 15th to oust President Salva Kiir in the vein of mass protests that began and went on for months in neighboring Sudan, which led to the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir. Major General Lul Roy Kwong, a spokesman for the South Sudan People's Defense Force, denies the military deployment has anything to do with calls for mass protests in South Sudan on social media sites.
I would like to inform the people of South Sudan that it is a normal beefing up of security measures around strategic locations within Juba, and it's in relation to our preparations to mark May 16th in about 7 days' time. It has nothing to do with the rumors that have been circulating on social media.
Kwong would neither confirm or deny reports that the government is organizing celebrations for May 16th, a day marking the 35th anniversary of the birth of the SPLM-SPLA rebel movement, which eventually fought for South Sudan's independence from Sudan.
Initially, we could not celebrate because of financial constraints, but this year we are hopeful that we might be in a position to do celebrations, and some of these places required some kind of beautification and clearances here and there, and therefore there is need for security to be built up around such places so that those who are going to be tasked with the responsibility of preparing the location go about their work without being interrupted.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe says there is no reason for people to be frightened by the sight of military patrols around Juba.
Yesterday there was a general parade patrolling done by the security organs, and people started to panic that there is something going on. And I'm here to assure the people that this is a normal routine exercise that is usually done by the security forces, especially at the eve of any celebration.
Heavily armed presidential guards known as the Tiger Division remain stationed at Juba's John Garang Mausoleum. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangement Monitoring Mechanism, or CITISAM, the body monitoring the implementation of South Sudan's ceasefire, warns if the parties do not take their work seriously, they will jeopardize the revitalized peace deal. Some army generals representing the parties say unless leaders commit to fully implement the agreement, nothing much will change. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
CITISAM Head Major General Desta Abiche again told the military and security officers representing the various parties at the start of a two-day security workshop on security arrangements in Juba today that they must fully implement the terms of the deal. Again says that includes cantoning, screening, and training forces from the various parties and then redeploying them.
Our expectations are that the parties will fully comply with the permanent ceasefire in all those activities. Therefore, we request all parties to allow citizens immediate and unconditional access. Without this, we will face serious challenges, and this will jeopardize the agreement. This requires close communication and cooperation by all mechanisms.
Officials from CITISAM, the Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission and Regional Bloc IGAD say a lack of commitment from all the parties has hindered the implementation of security arrangements over the past 8 months. Some generals told the South Sudan in Focus that, besides a lack of commitment, a lack of funds, and a failure to coordinate activities among the parties has also delayed carrying out security arrangements. Major General Moro Isaac Genesio of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, who also heads the Secretariat for the Joint Military and Ceasefire Commission, says a lack of trust among party leaders is a big problem.
It took the parties quite some time to come to believe that they are able to work together as parties, and this has taken a significant time in the pre-transitional period that should have been the time would have used for the implementation of the security arrangement.
Isaac says to date, the parties have only named offices of the various security committees, carried out orientation meetings for party officials, and enhanced observation of the permanent ceasefire. He says unless the parties work with each other, forming a unity government by November will be difficult, if not impossible. SPLIO Major General Buddha John Aban is a co-chair of the Joint Military and Ceasefire Committee. He says the parties need to demonstrate political will if security arrangements like verifying barracks and cantonment areas for the various forces are to be implemented within the next 6 months.
If the all resources are put in place critically, within these 6 months we will be finished all things that we have been not achieved with the last 8 months.
General Agustino Njoroji, acting chairperson of RGMEC, told the officials from the various parties that, aside from focusing on technical areas, the parties must talk to each other.
You must support and communicate with each other frequently and in detail. RGMEC security advisors informed me that lack of coordination has been a fundamental problem limiting your actions to date. As you put your plans into effect, close coordination will be vital to success.
The parties are expected to assemble, canton, train, and unify their forces under one command over the next 6 months and to reach a compromise on the number of states and their boundaries. The parties agreed there will be no additional extensions. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The non-profit Crown the Women South Sudan is working to challenge beliefs that women have no values in South Sudanese society. Ria William, the group's executive director, says they came up with a social media campaign called Ma Mara Sakit, meaning not just a woman, to discredit widely used term Mara Sakit, which means just a woman.
where that campaign came from basically is, if you go to South Sudan up to now, 2019, we still have this common phrase of Itamar Sakit, which is dehumanizing women, which is disrespecting women, which is putting women down.
It's a derogatory term.
Yes, yes. And so we are fed up of that term. I mean, it's been said everywhere, at a national level, at a grassroots level, it's a household label as well towards women and girls. We have seen also this being, that is at a national level, at the grassroots level, for example, where there's so much that's happening, so much work that is being done by women, but it's not acknowledged, it's not appreciated.
So where does this idea that a woman is just a woman come from?
Well, of course, it's always culture, it's always the patriarchal country or system that we are entrenched in. So It comes from that. It comes from long ago, even before we were born, I'm sure. Yeah.
Could you give us a glimpse of what life is like for the average South Sudanese woman? Could you talk about your personal experience?
I mean, I think there are so many lives to this woman. One, there is a life that is expected from her as a society or as a community. For example, she's expected to wake up early in the morning to make breakfast for the family. And of course, most of our families are made up in a way that they're extended and huge families. So she wakes up, she's supposed to take care of everyone in the house. She's supposed to cook for everyone. She's supposed to clean. She's supposed to be a housekeeper, a house taker, a mother, and all these kinds of expectations that the society comes with. She's supposed to also provide for the family where possible. For example, I have seen women waking up early in the morning, besides doing their house chores, they're going to the market to look for a means of survival. They're sitting under that scorching sun that is burning them to just sell things like grains, foodstuffs, vegetables, to get some money to take back home at the end of the day as well. For a woman that is working, for example, who has an office job besides these other casual works or jobs, she's expected to be in the office, let's say, by 8. But before that, she's supposed to wake up early in the morning and do something, duty of a woman, some wake up
housework
and all that, then go to the office and then go work. At 5, she's expected to go run to the market, look for food, buy food, come back and cook for the family and all this. So this is the life of a woman. She works more than 24 hours.
And what I've heard from other activists is that the way that you reverse these cultural ideas that put women down is through policy, through the law, through the peace agreement. And that's why women activists have been pushing for the quota in the peace agreement to make sure that women are represented. But the quota is only 35%. Why not push for 50% women representation in the transitional government?
Well, again, I mean, we as women of South Sudan, we pushed for 50%. And while the peace talks were happening, we did not just sit back and say, let's wait to be given as women. We came up together, and so I'm part of this coalition called the South Sudan Women Coalition for Peace, and we came up with green lights, we came up with red lights. What that means is, like, the green lights, for example, women should be accorded 50% at all levels of government. And if this does not happen, we shall not allow to be part of this peace process or this peace agreement. And I mean, it's a tough environment we are in. It's a tough lake full of crocodiles that we are fighting and struggling in. And with all these struggles back and forth, the men are like, we cannot give you 50%. And it was a push and pull. And yeah, finally we got 35%, which is better than the 25% that we had before. So it is a long journey. It's still a long way to go. I mean, we have 35%, but is it being accorded to us? No, we are now begging for it after fighting for it. So it's a long journey, as I said, and we will still keep on pushing until we get there.
That was Ria William Yayuda, Executive Director of Crown the Woman South Sudan, speaking to my colleague Ayen Dengbior here in Washington. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a closer look at the challenges facing non-governmental organizations working in South Sudan. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you are feeling anxious, what can you do to calm down?
Do what I like to do best: read the Bible, watch movies that would educate me, and then read books as well.
You are in such kind of situation, you have to calm down. Don't take any action. Just relax, sit down. It can even take you to a situation where you can lay down your ribs to have a relaxation so that at least your memories and your positive thinking will come back to you.
I usually like to listen to music when I'm anxious. I listen to music that will make me feel free.
I encourage myself. Sometimes I put music on. I play, dance alone in my room. And that gives me the excitement to move on, because every situation is not permanent. It will change the next day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Non-governmental organizations have been operating in South Sudan since the 1970s and 80s. Many under the Operation Lifeline Sudan, structured prior to the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement that ended the Sudan's 21 years of fighting. There are over 155 international non-governmental organizations and over 169 national organizations operating in South Sudan. The NGO Forum operates to support and represent interests of its members with authorities, donors, and UN agencies and other relevant stakeholders. NGOs operate in South Sudan are regulated by the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission that coordinates the work of non-governmental organizations. We have on telephone live in Washington, D.C., Dr. Peyos Ojara, the director of the South Sudan NGO Forum. Dr. Ojara, welcome to this show.
Thank you very much.
I understand you are in Washington here talking about issues to do with the non-governmental organizations in South Sudan. How is the situation of NGOs in South Sudan?
The NGOs in South Sudan are very active. They are working very hard to reach the populations in need and trying all they can to be able to meet critical needs as much as they are able to do.
And let's talk about the peace agreement. Chapter 3 of the Revitalized Agreement for the Resolution of Conflict in South Sudan speaks about humanitarian assistance and reconstruction. How are NGOs preparing for this critical role?
The humanitarian situation in South Sudan still remains high. We have nearly 60% of the population in need of food assistance, and nearly 900,000 children facing acute malnutrition, and the NGOs are focusing on responding to these needs.
And this sounds quite alarming. I mean, you also have people who are internally displaced. I'm talking about South Sudanese living at the protection of civilians or POCs. Mm-hmm. And they are going through a lot of challenges. What is the NGO Forum doing to find a solution to these people? Because they just live across at Jebel. And here you see people living good life and on the other side of the town in Juba and across Jebel Kujur, you have people living in a very deplorable conditions.
Our members are delivering services in the POCs, that is protection of civilian sites. And beyond that, I just want to note that the population of internally displaced people in the POCs make up 10%. The majority of internally displaced people are not in the POCs, and that is also where a number and majority of our members are delivering services to meet the needs of the population.
And talking about services, we normally read donor reports and, you know, donors pledging money for South Sudan. And this money is in the tunes of millions of dollars. And NGOs get this money, and yet some analysts and some critics are saying there is little to show for that amount. Why is that so?
It depends how you look at it. One thing I can tell you for sure is that humanitarian assistance has kept people alive. And that is really important. You can't put really value on that. I know sometimes it is easier to talk about houses that are built or roads that are constructed, but actually people are alive. And that is the critical need at this point in time. And it is important to appreciate that. And also the sector itself provides a lot of employment opportunities for South Sudanese. Members of NGO Forum employs approximately 24,000 staff, of which 22,000 South Sudanese. So the sector is also contributing to that and building the capabilities of young South Sudanese. The forum, NGO Forum, has instituted an internship program that takes and assign about 100 South Sudanese graduates to NGOs to give them work experience in the sector. And last year, 30% of these were absorbed by the NGOs. So the sector is making contribution in various ways beyond delivering their services.
Talking about the contribution of the NGO sector, I mean, there is a complaint from people in South Sudan. For instance, they are saying the NGOs are giving, you know, preference to people from certain areas. For instance, in Juba, they say the NGOs only employ people from Equatoria. How do you react to that?
We have these issues have been raised to us, and part of what we're dealing with is the legacy of the history. We have found the sector to be constituted the way it is constituted, and one thing we have been working on very strongly has been to have more inclusive representation of NGO staffing from all across South Sudan. And as a result of that, the NGOs, through the NGO Forum, have worked very closely with the Ministry of Labor to develop and the NGO recruitment guidelines that was launched by the Ministry of Labor in March. And we believe that that will go a long way to systematically address the question of imbalance in the geographic representation in the sector. It is going to be a process.
I understand that the forum is also taking a lead on personal income tax for expatriates who have at some points, this is according to analysts, that most expatriates in South Sudan ignore South Sudanese laws. How are you moving on that front?
We are very keen to ensure that our members comply with all relevant laws of South Sudan, including on taxation. And when this matter was brought to our attention, we engaged with the National Revenue Authority and collaborated, and now all the experts that are members of the NGO community are paying their personal income tax.
Talking about the operations in South Sudan, there have been reports that a lot of NGOs are still experiencing access issues. I mean, the JMAC last report talked about NGOs still experiencing issues of access, some roadblocks, illegal roadblocks on the road, and some NGOs are not able to reach certain critical areas where they can deliver intervention. What can you tell us about these issues?
I'm going to say that there has been very significant improvement in the removal of roadblocks. Actually, over the last few months, there has been much reduction in the numbers of roadblocks on the roads. So we are working very closely with the national authorities in representing some of these issues to them so that they are tackled, and we have made great progress. And so frequently what happens is if issue shows up, we bring it to the attention of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission that then also engages at the arms of government to ensure where there are roadblocks, they are actually addressed and removed.
And if you're given an opportunity to speak to South Sudanese people directly, you know, some of them have been accusing the NGOs of living luxurious lives at the expense of the poor. What would you tell them?
What I can tell them that is that NGO Forum membership comprises 24,000 staffing, of which 22,000 are South Sudanese. That is a large constituency. It is going to be the case that there will be cases where people are not probably going to be adhering to the principle of delivery and commitment to the population in need. But by and large, the sector is very committed, and we are constantly encouraging our members to put the beneficiaries' interest first. It is a process. It is a collaborative process. And it is going to be an ongoing work that will involve us and the authorities and the communities together, so that we realize the hope of the South Sudanese, which are currently very high in the within the context of the revitalized peace agreement, which has seen significant decline in fighting. Actually, the guns have largely fallen silent in South Sudan, so there's a lot of hope.
Dr. Ojara, I mean, every opportunity comes with threats and opportunities. I mean, the peace agreement has its threats and opportunities. What are the opportunities out there for NGOs in South Sudan one after the peace agreement was signed?
The opportunities here is that we are going to be able to reach more people and reach other areas that probably have been very difficult to reach, so we are able to understand even better the scale of needs more broadly across South Sudan, and I think that is really great. And also, it gives the NGOs opportunities to engage local communities about their needs and what their commitments are and what more we can jointly do together to really rebuild South Sudan.
That's Dr. Pius Ojara. Thank you very much for speaking with us on the issues facing NGOs in South Sudan.
You're welcome. Thank you.
If you have just joined us, we have been speaking with Dr. Pius Ojara, Director of the South Sudan NGO Forum. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. I will now take you to Maridi State with this song, Gor Gor, by Kledi Muzika. Listening to Kledi Muzika with that Baka traditional song, singing about what the LRA have done to my people in Maridi. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a safe weekend, and we will meet you back here on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.